The experience of the Mahatma, as one knows him in the human flesh, is that of man, but the Gita is to look at what is known as the two sides of the Mahatma. These are the human state and the spiritual body. There is the experience of the earthly man who walks and talks with his friends, who dies but rises again. There is the other experience of the spiritual Vardhan of the risen Mahatma, an experience of a divine indwelling of the Hare immanent in man. It is as reasonable to isolate or overstress the historical element in Vardhan, since to do so can result in failure to grasp the timeless significance of the Mahatma. Likewise, it is equally unreasonable to neglect or discard the Vardhan, for it is an essential part of the spiritual revolution taking place in every age, the constant conflict between the Vardhan and the Kal forces. The idea of the Mahatma as representative man appears sometime to be quite startling to the traditionalists of religions. It need not be, though the eternal and essential God-man does involve seeming contradictions. The incarnation of the Mahatma in every age is not only a showing forth of the divine drama being played out, but also a continuing portrayal of the human drama. This gives the only true promise of salvation, the liberation of soul from the world of matter. 39. Chapter 3. The Doctrine of the Vardhan Marg. In the beginning there was only the mighty Hare, the Lord of Lords, the Absolute of all Absolutes, the All-Holy of Holies, the All-Merciful of Mercies and the Omnipotent Omnipresence and Omniscient of all universes and worlds. In the beginning, it slept, stirring not in the ocean of love and mercy in that sphere where man has never tread nor any angeled world. It is not a land, nor place or abode, but a mighty ocean of splendor and love. It is the reality of all realities, the dwelling place of the Hare, the ancient one whom all creatures, beings and men have worshipped through the ages. In the beginning it was the Alpha that slept, but it ruled in its slumbers over the mighty beings, elements, and creatures in the universes. Peace and happiness were everywhere, and little was there for the Hare to concern itself with over life and its offsprings. The sacred garden of esoteric wisdom in Nilalok was delightful for those beings who amused themselves there, while the Almighty slumbered and dreamed new worlds. In the eternity of the profound ocean of love and mercy, it stirred and aroused itself from this deep slumber. Wild tremors came down through the universes, shaking the heavens and those beings in the sacred gardens. They paused, then looked up in astonishment at the parting of the firmament. They were amazed at the seeming wrath of the heavenly world that split with rolling thunder and crashing echoes. The Hare aroused itself and looked out over the vastness of its domain, saw only the creatures of its making in play, amusing themselves without giving to one another. It whispered and the word went forth into the worlds of worlds. The worlds shook and all souls flew to find safety, but none was to be found. They stood and trembled before the 40 mighty Hare, the God of all gods, and listened. You have played when you needed to give succor and life to others. You must learn the truth by dwelling in my mansions below, in the house of your father. You shall return to my home when ready. None knew what the voice of the Lord was saying, yet all who heard its voice wondered. It was to build new worlds in which each soul would spend its youth, to germinate and spiritually unfold, to learn its true nature and mission throughout the universes of God. In the beginning all below the Atma world was only spirit, that known as the Vardhan, which moved throughout the void. Everything was without life, calm, silent. Void and dark was the immensity of space and time. Only the supreme power, the Vardhan, the self-existing essence of the Hare, moved within this dark gulf of nothing. The desire came upon the Hare to look upon this abyss outside the universes of light and sound. It desired to create new worlds and it created these worlds below the Atma plane. The desire came to it to create the zodiac and the 12 constellations therein, and to place living things upon each. The desire came upon it to form the sun, moon, planets and other worlds of the void, and it gave each thing life. In each was placed a different embodiment of flesh, but to the creation of earth it gave the apex of life, called man. But first there were only rude forms of life. It took the gases, which were without form, and scattered them throughout all space. Out of them were formed the planes, universes, worlds and planets, including the Earth. The gases solidified to form the worlds and all its heavens. Out of these came the water and the atmosphere, and darkness prevailed. There was no sound for, as yet the Vardhan had not entered into all the worlds of time and space. After the atmosphere was created, the Hari formed the outside gases and waters which covered the face of all worlds, and there were no land masses anywhere. So the Hari looked, and dreamed to see what it would do with these worlds it had created in the vast regions outside its own domain. 41. It commanded the sun to give light and the atmosphere to open so that its rays could fall upon the worlds of darkness. Then light penetrated the darkness and made it bright and illuminated. The Hari created the whirling masses in space and the planets began to rotate around the suns within their universes, including the Earth, and there was an alternating of light and darkness. The light of the sun and the heat of the atmosphere met and gave warmth to the worlds. This brought life. The Vardhan entered into the worlds of time and space and began to plant the cosmic eggs of life forms. Then the Hari moved the gases within the bodies of the worlds and raised the lands above the waters. Life came forth in the waters when the sunlight penetrated the mud, stirring the cosmic eggs planted by the Vardhan, and life forms appeared. Again, the sunlight penetrated the dust of the lands, stirring the cosmic eggs planted by the Vardhan, and from these cosmic eggs life forms came forth. These life forms were many, and they roamed over the lands and in the seas for yugas upon yugas. Then the Hari looked again and saw that another embodiment was needed to complete the link of the life chain from mineral form to spirit form. So it commanded that the apex of life come into embodiment, fashioned after the great Saturn arm, who is the first manifestation of the supreme deity, and endowed him with power to rule the worlds below the heavens. Then the spiritual workers created man and placed within him a living imperishable spirit, called soul, and man became like the living gods of the spirit worlds with intellectual powers, physical strength, and soul. He roamed the worlds, living off the creatures of the fields, the fruits of the trees, and the products of the soil. The mighty Hari spoke to its spirits and angels. Lo, all those who have played in the fields of heaven shall descend to earth and take the body form. Each will be given an adhikarma by the lords of karma, to carry during his earthly lives. Each shall go through body upon body, reincarnation after reincarnation, until the day comes when he shall meet with me again in the body form in which I shall be known as the Margatma. Only when he is ready and has reached, 42, perfection, when all dross has burned away and he has gained spiritual maturity, will he return to the heavenly fields and become a worker in the spiritual realms. Until then he shall spend his time as soul, in the lower worlds, learning his catechism and being educated to his true purpose in his heavenly home. Each soul that is created shall go through the fires of the worlds below and be drowned in the seas of tears, agony and unhappiness, until he cries out for me to reach down to him. Until he has been purified, until he has gone through all the mystic rituals, through the cave of fire and the seas of agony which give him perfection, shall my face be turned from him. The imperishable spirits called souls fell upon their knees and wailed their anguish to the heavens. The Hari had spoken and commanded that they go down into the depths of fire, mud and terror to receive their discipline, to become a co-worker with the Almighty. Life in eternity had been one of pleasure, play and happiness, that no mortal being had ever known. To exchange that for a life of misery, unhappiness and the burdens of karma, was more than each soul could bear. The Hari closed its eyes and dreamed again. The wailing of the souls did not reach it. The dreams that came were of creation that formed over the worlds below. It created, and, out of the creation came a manifestation of itself, that mighty deity whom all mankind knows as the Saturn arm. So mighty is he, that few who approach can but believe that here is the Almighty, the Lord of Lords. The floor of heaven opened and all souls went tumbling downward through the worlds, through the plains and regions of light, darkness, the sounds of the wild winds, the universes and heavens. At last, each came to rest upon the worlds of matter, some in the newly formed planets of Venus, Saturn, Jupiter, and those named by man from his little world of Earth. Many came to the Earth planet and formed the consciousness of man in the flesh temple of a human body, to wear the cloth of misery and unhappiness, and take up the burdens of karma until at last, one day, each would be ready to return to the heavenly home. 43. Some accepted a human body, others came into consciousness as stone, rocks, minerals, birds, animals and fish. But all manifestations of the Hari received the consciousness of the lower worlds. Then there were the rulers of the four planes which were established in the worlds of time and space. First, the Hari manifested itself in the last heavenly plane in its own form, which became Satnam, the ruler over all worlds in the lower universe. Under him was formed the spiritual hierarchy of Sohang, Ramcha, Omka and Jatnaranjan, each in order down to the last material plane of the lower universe. At the top of these material worlds the Prince of Darkness took his place to act as the tempter of soul. He was given the name of Kalranjan. Ranjan is the false power that symbolizes the negative. It is evil, the force that makes soul believe that happiness lies in material life. It is the Satan of the psychic worlds. All that are tempted by, and succumb to, its whispers of joy and riches shall remain in the fires of torture on the wheel of a wagawan, or coming and going. This is the age-long cycle of births and deaths, transmigration, the reincarnation of soul. Ranjan is the power of mind. It is the psychic power and those who live in ignorance listen to its sweet whispers of hope. It appeals to the vanity of human consciousness. But it can never succeed, for the souls who have been pitched into the darkness of the universes shall someday give up and return to their heavenly home to be with the Hari. There they will become workers in the spiritual field somewhere in the worlds of light and love. Those souls which follow the beckoning finger of Naranjan to organized religion shall take the wrong turn of the road. None but the living Vardhan Master, who is descended to the worlds of matter to give all souls an opportunity to return to heaven, is capable of offering this opportunity. All others are false prophets and shall not be heeded. Those who listen to Naranjan are listening to the false prophet. The sweet whispers of this negative genius are heard in the voices of those who make claims to be the 44 prophets of the times and the preachers, clergy and priests who represent the old orthodox religions. Beware, lest they sway you to listen and change toward the Kalranjan, who rules the planets of the lower universes. Never talk of achievements in Vardhan, for this brings only disaster to the Kila. Speak not of any achievement nor any loss, for it only brings about the retardment of spiritual attainment. This is the way of the Kal. Its duty is to arrest the spiritual unfoldment of soul, and the duty of soul is to ward off these attempts of Kal. The human consciousness is prey to auto-intoxication, for the Kal floods the consciousness of man with various poisons bred by various states of mind and emotion. The most poisonous of these states are fear, anger, worry, sentimental emotionalism and envy. The destructive emanations set up by these mental emotional states clog the virility and sensitivity of the human race like a heavy pall. The emanations from terrified, slaughtered creatures add to the general aggravation of Gal's works with the human consciousness. Truth can be understood only by one who is in a state of vigilance, therefore, none who are in a slack condition of mind will find it available. Truth is not in the heights but at the bottom of all things. It must be struggled for and sought after and come upon through earnest effort, through the stimulation brought about by suffering or striving, whereby the consciousness is prepared to recognize it. Truth always appears to be veiled, guarded and hidden from the eyes of the profane. At first souls found little within the worlds of space. There are no boundaries where all is infinite, nor age where time is the only measure of change within the changeless, nor death where life is the indestructible pulse of energy in the heat and the cold. There is no morning, noon nor evening, for what has always been and will always be, is just what it is. As there was no beginning for every soul who came into its own recognition, there could be no end. But each found in living within the worlds of matter, energy, space and time, that there is, and has been and always will be, continuous change in the appearance of things which, in the small chronology of finite perceptions, is the life of the human, 45, body known as birth and growth, evolution and progress, age and death. Within the physical universe there occurred in countless eons a stupendous explosion that rearranged the destinies of the suns. One of these smaller suns, a white-hot incandescent splinter at the main sun, fell into the darkness, leaving behind vast streamers. Now shot too far out to return to its parent light, it formed a scattered field of light which came together in irregular orbits around the star it had left. Thus, the world of planets and its neighboring stars were born. Smaller fires also, thrown far beyond the sun and close to the worlds, held in suspension by the pull of the two, moved over paths of their own. These millions of smaller fires were the scattered fragments of a new solar system, most of them useless. After cooling, after becoming small wandering nuggets of iron and stone, most of these fragments would in time go back to the sun or back to the world of solid matter, the Earth. The universe was not born in a moment nor a million years. It evolved through the ages from the white-hot sparks of the sun to the cold stone enveloping the furnace within its core. Then came the immutable laws to govern the worlds of the universe, and bring harmony to the course of those planets that revolved around the hot sun. Elements became precious within the soils of the Earth and other planets. Out of the heart of the world poured the energies and rhythms and harmonies which were the only substances of God, and the only substance of all things that are. Like its brother planets, the Earth became a world of its own, a living world, but a simple one of elements where the energies and rhythms were greater than those which were to come in the form of bodies of animals and men. The world made numerous journeys around the sun, 100 million times or more. Its gaseous body became a liquid and the surface roughly divided into hemispheres and poles. There was no haste, for within the oneness of the Horae it was only preparing for the coming of a more complex shape of life. Thus it became a new world where birth, youth, middle age, old age and death denoted changes in the appearance of things. The energy of the living God shaped the forms, 46, which made the world a cradle of life, the home of civilization, and the graveyard of all embodiments. But never once did it keep the souls of its embodiments within this sphere of the universes. The Horae destroyed nothing and lost nothing in the process of change. It only used the world to refine each soul that entered into it. It made the Earth a place for greater destiny, through the energies of the Vardhan flowing down from the ocean of love and mercy. The long pilgrimage out of the darkness and into the light began in the mud and the slime, working upward into the apex of human consciousness. Something was gained from the cycles of sense-ate things through birth, age and sleep, and into life again. They were born higher on the ladder of spiritual consciousness. The sea was the cradle of life. The magic of the Vardhan energies formed the complex union of molecules and built a cell of life. The tenacious hold on life of the molecule for existence caused it to wed with others and make a complex entity with tendencies of reaction and response to its environment, the power to move in the water, and seek food and protection. The masses of molecules developed into protozoa and finally into the vegetation of the sea, and, after millions of years, into plants, sponges, and flowers of the watery depths. Minerals developed in the same form on the land surfaces, but the first form that started evolving towards human embodiment was the fish. The law of Vardhan moved again in its very mysterious way and saw the need of organs and faculties in these creatures. Some became aggressive, feeding upon those which had only the vegetation and plants of the sea for survival. Intelligence came to the creatures of the sea. Simple as it was, it gave those without protection the only means of escape from the devouring paws of the beasts that swallowed unwary fish. The size and speed of these scourges of the sea grew, developing appetites without parallel. They became sires of the shark, whale, and other mammoth monsters of the deep. Some of these strange creatures came out of the sea to find easier prey. For a million years this saga went on, with the seaborn and the sea living moving from the water to the, 47, land. Creatures with gills and paddles developed lungs and legs in time. Many walked on hind feet, rearing in the air with crocodile heads and gleaming teeth. Into the dark, dank jungles they went, searching for food. They became stupendous bone-plated machines controlled only by a few lower reflexes, finding beetles as large as sparrows, and flying insects with a wingspread of 30 inches, for their hunger. Anything that walked, crawled and flew was food for their greed. These were ancestors of the reptiles. They grew 20 feet in height and 50 feet around. The tail was massive and the skull as large as a grown ox, with broad powerful teeth 6 inches long. The claws on the feet were curved a little longer than the teeth. The other species of brutes were just as fearful and frightening of aspect. They seldom attacked one another because of the thick armored skin. Some were vegetarian and others flesh eaters. They were moved by voracious hunger and fear. They were torpid mountains of bone and meat with the sluggish and cold-blooded nervous system of the reptile. For millions of years these monsters ruled the earth. A few of them became the dragon species that lived on the ground. But smaller dragons took to the air, flying on wings. These were more dreadful than those that walked on the ground. The Vardhan's experiment in dreadful creatures came to a sudden and dramatic ending. The dragons that had ruled for millions of years perished within a few centuries, unable to adapt to climatic changes. Too sluggish to migrate and having too little intelligence to understand the coming danger, they froze to death when the Great Ice Age took place. The Vardhan was now ready for another kind of creature for experiment and for the first time turned to those to whom it had given sympathy and care. These were the creatures of fear who had lived in dread from the day of birth to the day of death. The destruction of the killer beasts came about in a harsh world, so now the Vardhan prepared the earth for a more noble experiment for the Hari, the coming of souls into this world. The Vardhan softened and beautified the great, formidable earth, covering the mountains with forests and scatterings of 48 wild flowers over the hills. The valley teemed with butterflies and singing birds. Lights and shadows were given to the morning and evening of the day. Now the mammals entered into the world and became the faunas of this genus, including man, today. These were the milk givers that housed the unborn in their bodies, not by eggs as their fierce predecessors had done. They gave their young care after birth, for now love had entered into the world. The age prior to this was one of tremendous savagery, for often the dragons and other beasts ate their young hatched from eggs, or one another. However, this was not a gentle age by any means, for still there were the savage beasts, such as the cat family, the saber-toothed tiger and all its kin, the bear, dog and wolf. There were giant hogs and mammoths, flesh-eaters all of them. There were two great clans, the killers, who ate only flesh and who spent all their waking hours stalking and killing their prey, and the timid beasts that fed off the earth. Out of these clans came men, who originally were leaf-eaters and lived in terror of the killer beasts that stalked and trapped them. Souls that came into this lower environment had to take on the embodiment of flesh in order to exist in the vibrations of this materialistic world. But he had no place to live for he was prey to the brutality of the flesh-eaters. He was not a creature with fangs, claws and muscular strength. What strength he had was not enough. He could not venture into the waters for the beasts awaited ready to tear him apart. In the jungles were the huge serpents and deadly insects, on the prairies were the wolves. There was no spot on earth for him to safely lay his head. He had only one place to live and that was in the trees. So it was in the high treetops of the forest that he built his home to be safe from the prowling animals that killed him for food. Not the primate, but the soul and form of man himself. He developed an amazing agility to swing through the higher branches. For ages, he was a treetop tenant, rarely venturing to the ground. He drank water from the leaves and ate the foliage, and made his bed in a tree crotch. He scorned the endless spectacle of slaughter which went on beneath him. But the day came when he was to descend to 49, the soil of earth and leave his distant cousins still in the treetops. At first he walked on 4 feet, then learned to stand upright, and what was a creature now became a man because he could think, and by thinking he could protect himself. Thereupon, he found a persistent pattern of behavior that set him free. Never again could his supremacy be threatened nor his foe be more than his slave, for they were the beasts of the forest, the birds of the air and the creatures of the sea. Then human consciousness came into being, and man became the supreme creature upon the earth. He developed thought and the ability to use it to protect himself against the flesh killers and the environment. He found shelter in the caves and fashioned weapons out of sticks and stones. He found that the female reproduced his species and he lived in family groups. At first the female was taken by force, for man was a strange and violent creature belonging to the blood-stained and bestial past of the human race. A headman or chief was selected to supervise the family, and the tribe which gathered around him. Civilization formed in a primitive manner and there appeared in the world the first Varden Master, who was without name. He was important to the human race because his task was to minister to their needs and give to all succor and wisdom. Primitive man believed that stones and trees were homes of the spirits who served under supernatural beings who ruled everything. Soul was not yet developed in man for it to understand and know what it was seeking. But it lived in a universe where the laws of the world are different, sundered from all things by gulfs and far dimensions. The ancient world of Polara, the Garden of Eden, loomed upon the horizon. Stretching from the greater sea in the east to that in the west, this civilization was known for its great forested lands to the north, the steppes-dwelling creatures, and the fierce desert of the rich eastern lands. This was the beginning of the races of man upon earth. Within the world of the past and before the dawn of recorded history, at the western extremity of the continent of Europe, Asia and Africa, the Polarian or the Adamic race of pale, 50, copper-skinned peopled world. Out of the forests came man, walking upright. His first act of worship was for the luminous power that scattered darkness and evil. It was a great golden eye, like a wheel, or a halo of glory, rising majestically out of the underworld with the heat of its body spreading over the whole hungry earth. The first Polarian man was Adam the Rabi, and he stood on the summit of a hill. His female companion, Aid, stood back with bowed head as he addressed his sun god. He prayed for food, protection from pain and enemies, and well-being for his woman. He was granted everything but freedom from pain and emotion. He knew when the danger came, for out of the forests came another creature walking upright like himself, who wanted the female. The battle was bitter but Adan won and drove off his foe. He produced a man-child and another, and human history began. Gradually the creatures gathered and formed a clan. Slowly they hacked out the forests, fought the flesh-eaters and won, until a civilization was born on the edge of the rivers that flow through the continent called Asia. Malati, the first Varden Master, was sent by the Hare into this world to give man his first spiritual knowledge of God. For men drifted apart, fought one another for domination over tilled lands, trade, women and slaves and what little wealth they had in precious stones. Slowly the Varden was building its species. Then came the race of men called the Hyperborean, and this became the age of the same name, the second root race of mankind. The Hyperborean were the clans that drifted onto land where there was perpetual sunshine. The rains fell heavily upon the forests and created the jungle growth. The north wind never touched the heart of this world and the face of man became darkened by the sun in jungle regions. Where the Polarian man was a tiller of the soil, a shepherd and a hunter, his successor was a higher being who built cities and founded a civilization in the heart of the equatorial jungle. He developed weapons for fighting, and pots for holding his food. He elected a king to rule over the mighty empire of Melnibora. 51. The empire lived on for 100 centuries, ruled over by the fierce Varkas kings. They swept across the jungles and over the heat of the sands to the north, conquering the wild tribes of men with white skins. They made slaves of the conquered, forcing them to work in their fields, in their weapons shops, and in the homes of their nobility. The kings ruled by the formless terror called sorcery, with powers greater than anything witnessed prior to their times and for centuries to come. The Varkas used their awful powers to conquer their subjects and their foes. They cast spells upon the masses and dealt in terrible mysteries with the dead. Some of the kings conquered time and lived for centuries. They ruled through the priests who were known as the Zwijis, and these priests were more terrible than their masters. They were ruthless, giving quarter to no man when captured on the field of battle. The victim was killed, or saved for a fate more fearful than anything man could believe. If he was saved for the stables of the nobleman or to work in some household, the captured was indeed fortunate. Living in secret and teaching to those who would give ears was the great Gaikuas, the living Vardhan master of these times. He was discovered by the Vakas and slain.